you know, being a musician is like someone giving you a bunch of like paint and nails and like 2x4s and like broken shit out of a dumpster. And it's like, now go do something with like,
just go.
It's like, well, what's the first step? What do you mean? There is no first step. The first step is up to you. Okay. So like, how do I get people to watch what I'm doing? You figure that out. Like there really is no recipe for this. You just got to go and go and go. And
I think, you know, when we were starting, we didn't have as many resources as we do now. I think anyone that's starting, that wants to be an artist now, there is more of a blueprint to success. Because people like us have gone through like the grind part of it and learned the different ways to approach being an artist and a musician. And being an artist has been redefined now, like bring out your brand to the world in a lot more streamlined ways of doing it versus tour, or, you know, go to line up at Warped Tour and giving out demos. You know, that's the stuff that I saw back in the day. And that was this kind of stuff that I thought was cool. I'm like, man, that's so smart. You know, go mm-hmm. to a festival where people are on in line, they have nowhere else to go. And you just like kind of deliver your product to them in like a very appropriate environment. Yeah. Right
now, how antiquated does that sound? Right. Like now,
now people, yeah,
it's an inconvenience. Like, hey, stick this into your car at some point whenever you feel like it, if you're going to listen to this.
Like go into a venue, like, okay, there's a metal show tonight. I'm going to go hand out CDs at the line trying to get inside the door. Like, it's not going to do shit for me. You know, we went to years ago, there was New England Metal Fest. I forget what year we went to, but a bunch of us got into a car. Omar?
It was Yumi and Mark.
Yeah, me. But we met Billy there. I don't know who else was there. And we were like, oh, let's print out like business cards with QR codes in the back of that will link to like our YouTube. And it was like the smartest thing we could think of. So we went there, we're handing out like cards, and no one there is like putting it in their pocket and thinking, oh, I'll listen to this later. They're just inundated with metal all day long that I think, you know, after an hour of being there, the next thing you know, we see our cards all over the floor. Like that, people just tossing that shit on the ground.
Hey, what's up? You like metal? Here, throw this out later.
Yeah, throw it out later. It's just no one wants the flyer. I guess there's more of a blueprint, but at the same time, I've never thought of this until just now, but like there's this show on TV called Alone. There's a bunch of seasons on it. And if you watch season one, these people go out to the middle of the woods and they have to individually survive, like without contact with someone else for as long as they can. You've seen it. Okay.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. That show's rad. First season, people get there, their sheds look like shit, and they last like 3 days, 4 days, like 6 days in, half the contestants are out. Like one guy builds like a half-ass boat and it's like, oh my God, he built a fucking boat. You go in 4 or 5 seasons, everyone's got like a fucking 3-door patio situation cabin set up with like beautiful windows and like traps and all this shit. Like people just got so good over a couple of seasons and everyone's got a boat. People got fucking airplanes and people aren't gone after 3-4 days. People are gone after three months.
Right.
So, you know, and it makes me think about like this a little bit. You know, at some point the blueprint was, yeah, just fucking, you don't got to build this elite starship. Just like build a cabin and you're good. It makes me think of metal production too. Like 20 years ago, you'd listen to metal production, man. A bunch of years ago, the kick drum, the non-quantized sound, so it's tough now just to get it, your toe in the door. You have to be perfect on all of these things.
I agree with that 100%. Like, it's funny you say Alone because I actually love that show, and I always, when I'm watching it, I'm always thinking like these later seasons, they've obviously looked at the older seasons and studied what they did wrong, and you know, reflecting on, oh, what would have I have done in that position? And you can really apply that to pretty much any business relative to like the generation and you know, even being an artist and being a creator overall. I wouldn't say, yeah, there's not like one single blueprint, but there, I think it's kind of established like what the old fashioned blueprint was. And then when looking at it 10 years later with all these resources, you can see where that blueprint doesn't necessarily work for everybody, and that there's always better ways to be more efficient with the different aspects of that blueprint. So,
so what's your?
I love that.
What's your blueprint? You got some new music coming out. what are you thinking?
So it's still something I'm trying to navigate myself. As of right now, you know, maybe the song's out after this, right? After we've recorded this podcast, but we're still trying to figure it out. And we're in a position now that we're independent and we have full creative control and full marketing control. And for myself, I'm still learning. For Nathan and Aaron, still learning. So I don't have a blueprint, but like I said, I'm like season 9 of alone looking at seasons 1 through 3 and being like, we don't need to do that, or that doesn't necessarily work. And just trying to go at our pace as well. I think music, being an artist, and life balance is very important for the mental and physical aspects of it. So, you know, I want to be in full control, and I want to just do it in a very healthy approach for me. So that's the way I look at it now. Once, you know, once we get the ball rolling and people listen to what we have coming out, and see how people respond to it, you know, we'll be reactive and really put ourselves out there a little bit more. And for me, I don't want to do like the overly serious kind of approach like we've always done. I kind of want to be a little bit more personable with our fans. And find ways to connect with them outside of just listening to us on Spotify.
Yeah, there are artists that I like that they've never become over personable. When Jesse Zaretti was on here, we were talking about like what makes a legend, like a legend guitarist. Because, you know, growing up with my guitar heroes, you know, to me, you know, some of these guys like Schofield and Matheny and obviously like Holdsworth and you know, these were like legends. These are legends to me. And then he said, well, what about like Thordendahl? And I was like, yeah, Thordendahl, like Thordendahl from Sugar is like legend. And we were thinking like, yeah, I think a big part of being a legend is probably not like inundating the internet with your content and being accessible and like, just do your thing, put out the music, be confident in it. And, you know, that's all you got to do. But, you know, that's one side of, there's no right way to do this. I'm trying to be more accessible. I've taken a step back from like teaching. I think the teaching thing was taking a little bit of the magic out of what I was writing. And, you know, I don't have to teach everything that I do, but I can be accessible and just talk about my general theories in terms of music and why I write music, or maybe why you should write music. And, so that feels good to me right now. Like that kind of, you know, wearing that kind of hat.
Love that.
Yeah. And also putting out this music that I just released, you know, I had somewhat of a strategy. I figured music videos, single drops, you know, like you got to milk this stuff nowadays. It's not just about here's 12 new tracks. You got to, you know, drop your singles. I'm learning that on Spotify. Like a big reason why artists started doing that in anticipation of an album is because when the album does drop, it actually does take into account the listens that all of those previous tracks have. So you can drop 10 tracks individually as singles. They each get 1,000 listens. You know, it's, I'm using easy numbers here. When hopefully your track has more than 1,000 listens. Mine barely do. when the album drops, it drops with 10,000 listens. And so whatever algorithm is out there saying, like, what are the hottest albums right now? Oh, this one has got it in a head start because it's got 10,000 listens the moment that it drops. And so you got to play with these, you got to play with these kinds of things. It makes me want to drop like a 100 track album of everything I've ever done, just so it could be like, here, look at all these, this is a brand new album. Look at all these listens that it got in the first day.
That makes sense, to be honest. Like, again, there is no one way how to do to release music, right? And you kind of have to release it according to your situation, according to your brand, right? Like, it's gonna all be different. But for me, I just, you know, try to do it how you want to do it, I think is going to be like the best way for yourself artistically and just making that good organic music without being like, oh, we have to have a whole 12 song album and we have to have it released at this day, and just dropping it out of the blue, where, you know, doing those singles, you're kind of giving your fans a taste and also keeping them on their toes for when the next release is going to be. When you do like a surprise drop without like anything leading up to it, it can work for some artists. Like Drake can probably do that, right? But for artists like us, like it's just gonna plant, and then people are gonna see it. They're like, oh, the album's out. Well, the whole thing's there. It's not going anywhere. So I'll get to it eventually. You know, that's the way I look at it. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do, right? Like if there was a full album that just kind of came out the blue, I'd like, yeah, I'll listen to it for like a little bit, and then, oh, okay, I'll listen to the rest of it later. Whereas like a single and keeping people guessing and that like mystifies the whole like presence of an artist online. It's just like you don't know what's going to come next, and I think that's what people like to. It's like a playful kind of connection with the artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that this genre or rock metal in general, story is a big thing. Like, you know, you get narrative and you get story when you're a band that's been around for a long time. You've been around for 15 years. Like you're, you know, you've probably done some live video footage. You've got a couple different album covers. You've played shows and people wear your shirts, and like a story kind of naturally builds out of that. But even for like a newer band, I think it's important to start thinking about story. If you're writing rock, metal in particular, because that's going to be a huge part of your package. Like sounds sick. I don't think that really flies anymore. And you look at a band like Sleep Token, like wearing masks, almost putting on like a theatrical performance. There's like some rumors of who they might be under those masks floating around the internet. Like there's a fun story there. And you listen to them. If you listen to that music, like on a cassette, like a demo, like, hey, here's my demo. And you put it in, it sounds like a guy singing over piano and some metal stuff. It sounds good. I'm not going to hate on it and say that it doesn't sound good. It does. It sounds great, but lots of things sound great. But you mix that with really good story you know, I used the term merchants of emotion on here a couple podcasts ago, and music. What is our job here? Is it to write sick music, to be the coolest musician, to like boast our egos, or is it to be a merchant of emotion? However, we got to do that. Just doing music is only going to get you so far. I think story fills in a lot of that mileage. And and how you do that in progressive music is for me, I don't know. I don't know what my story is. I have no idea. This is kind of just some new thinking. You know, what's the story going to be around my next music? What's my story in general? Like, why does Nick write music? And also with these platforms now, there's an opportunity to tell a story. You know, you couldn't, like years ago, it was just about an album drop and how sick the songs were. But now we have an opportunity to tell a story over singles and short form content and arbitrary conversational things. Yeah. What do you think about that?
I completely align with that, actually. Like, the way I look at it is like the old model was, you know, the big, you drop an album. To me, that's like, oh, it's like dropping like a movie. You know, it's like one big long form kind of way to take in like the art. Whereas like now everybody's like more into streaming and binge watching long seasons of shows, right? And the best way to do that is to create a long story through your marketing and your presence online, right? Just like you said with Sleep Token, right? Like they stay true to their worship, their
There's keywords there.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's keywords, there's characters.
Vibe, the hoods. They're literally characters. Like Vessel is the vocalist, right? Like, and you only know him as Vessel. And literally, you could put that guy into a comic book and have his own comic book because he's just got such a mysterious, like him alone is a story, you know, mm-hmm. like, and like the way that he sings, and obviously he's very unique in this genre of music, but they just supplement it with the whole theatrics and the consistent theme. Like what if like tomorrow like Vessel just came out without his mask? Like it would completely shatter the image, I feel, you know. So they're constantly releasing just more and more of that same content over and over, like a TV show, consistently through TikTok, through you know shorts, reels, just their overall, even like the way that, you know, they announce like tours. Like it's not like, hey, what's up North America, we're gonna, they're like, consume today, we will be gathering. Like it's like consistently with every interaction that they have with their fan base is so consistent since the first day that they surfaced on the platform. And it's amazing. You know, that's a lot of hard work, right? And yeah. That would have took a lot of thought and a lot of consistency throughout the entire time they're building their presence online. So yeah, 100%. Like,
yeah, and there's other venues that do this. Broadway, come be part of the magic. Fucking Frozen on Ice, you know, like, come with, of what the fuck's her name? My kid loves this movie, Elsa, and travel to the dark mystical castle or whatever, whatever. You know, it's that kind of lingo. It's not like, hey, Mark here, and I'm Beth, and we're going to be starring in Harry Potter on Broadway. It's like, we don't care that you're Mark and Beth. You're Harry. You're fucking Hermione. Stick to the... Yeah, don't lose... I don't know if I clipped there, Omar. Don't lose... All right. Yeah, don't lose the story. You're taking me out of the story. Like, I don't care that you're Mark and Beth. You're Harry and Hermione. That's it. So
it's funny that you say that, because every time I come across like, hi guys, we're this and this and our new album is being released on like TikTok, I'm like, I don't give a fuck, and I just scroll past it. There's no story there, there's no slogan, there's nothing that's really grabbing my attention.
Right, exactly. And that's changed, you know, like it never used to be like that, you know, like you just kind of put out your music and be like, yep, we're doing shows, we're a band, check us out, yo.
Yeah.
And now I can see where things kind of need to change depending on what you want to do with your artistry, but to market yourself and how you want to, you know, portray yourself as a person and stuff. So
yeah, and again, like there's bands that have been around for 10, 15 years that don't necessarily need to think about that because they've developed their own story organically, you know. Like, I don't think Aaron Marshall needs a story. Intervals is a band that's been around for a decade. You know, the story there is, you know, five or so albums of, you know, you're listening to someone, you're listening to how their playing has changed, or listening to how the mix has evolved, or different people they've worked with. There is story there. It's more of a story that developed organically, though, that's mostly centered around like the person and the music. Like, let me see what this guy has been developing and how what he's developing now is different than what it was 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 6 years ago. You know, and I think that's probably what I would think about too, going to see one of my favorite just guitar players, you know, Joe, Steve, Bob, like sick guitar players that I like. They never have to think of a story. I just like to go see them to see like, what sounds are they interested in now? What has changed about their playing? Which is a hard hill to climb. That's a hill of consistency and like not deviating for at least a decade. You know, I don't think like if my brand were just come see Nick Lorandi play the guitar, I've been under a rock for a good portion of the last 10 years, but that's sort of been my message for the last at least year and a half, 2 years has been, I'm Nick Lorandi, I play the guitar. Like, here's some things, here are the sounds that I like to play. Tell me if you like them. And that would continue to be my message if I stayed on this trajectory. My next EP, I'll come out, I'll be inspired by some different stuff, hopefully have some different sounds. People will be like, oh shit, you're doing this thing now? That's pretty cool and clever. But that's going to take time, you know, 10 years, five EPs, a full length, some live shows, some live footage. Then I might have a story or like some cool footage of me maybe playing in Gramercy, in front of a bunch of people. That's going to give some social currency, you know. Social currency is big too. You see a band playing in front of 1,000 people versus 50 people. Those can be the exact same. They could, that could sound exactly the same, but social currency is going to bump it up and make it better in your mind. I mean, do you agree with that much, right? Like there's 100%. Great bands. Yeah. There's great bands that play in front of 50 people. But the moment that you can get a photo or a video of them killing it in front of 1,000 people, boom, social currency, more followers. This is the band I got to be listening to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I 100% agree with that. Yeah, social currency, that's a great way to put it. And that all ties in with, you know, social media as a tool for artists and businesses just overall. And yeah, I love that. Actually, I'm learning so much just like being able to just like discuss this, because this is not like a normal conversation you would have at a bar. Necessarily.
No, you'd be shitting on bands like, oh fuck that mix, that guy sucks. Yeah,
exactly, right? Yeah. And it's like it's very rare that you get to navigate this type of topic with other like-minded individuals in a space where you feel comfortable to discuss that. So I'm learning so much about it. It's like stuff that I already knew, but then you kind of sit back like, we're going to keep that in mind moving forward.
Yeah. Well, have you ever gone to like a therapist? You ever like sit in a chair and do an hour of therapy or?
I have never done it, but I'm like super open to do it.
It's pretty much this. It's great. Like things that you already were thinking, but it gives you a chance just to blurt it out. And then your brain just kind of goes, oh, wait a minute. Like the therapist might not even say anything. They're just sitting in the chair. Or they might like pull a little more things out of you, like, okay, what do you think about that? What do you think of them? Like, how would you do it differently? Next thing you know, you're like, oh my God, I fucking got it. Like, fucking epiphany.
It's very similar to journaling, because I've done journaling before where, you know, you wake up and you just write in your journal of just like, what are you thinking at this moment? What do you want to get accomplished? Or like sometimes you do it at the end of the day where like, how did today go? How'd you feel? Right? And like without actually writing it down and letting it just kind of stick inside your head, you don't really realize some of the things that you're just the way that you kind of are programmed to go about your day, and it allows you to take a step back. And I think meditation is the same thing. I've also dabbled into meditation as well.
Oh, yeah.
I did it very. I was doing it pretty hard at the beginning of the year, and then I got to the point where, you know, I started, like, I actually saw the difference, and now I've just kind of been inconsistent, but, like, now I look forward to when I start to go back into it to know what to expect. Mm-hmm. But I know that meditation isn't for everyone. You need to have the time, you have to put in the time to aside in the day to actually commit to it. 'Cause it's not like something you just turn off the lights. You just kind of sit there. You have to wait till you're at the right, mind state to endure that for like 5 minutes. Yeah. So it's like a ramp up to it first kind of thing.
Yeah. I was doing transcendental meditation for a bit, 'cause it seemed like the easiest entry. It's such a scary sounding word. And what I've gathered from it is you have like a mantra word. You have a word that is like an arbitrary word. And I'm not supposed to tell you mine, because then it becomes non-arbitrary. It starts to mean something, because then I say it in my head. And the first thing is, oh, I've shared this with Omar and Josh. Like, it's got to be my secret word. No one knows. And this word means nothing. It's just a word. And I just made mine up. I just like made up some gibberish 3-syllable word. And but I think like if you went to a transcendental meditation class, like an expert like dawns on you this thing. But I'm like, that sounds like bullshit. I'll just make mine up. like you are now solar wind. It's like, fuck you. I don't want to be solar wind. Don't.
Sounds like a sick song name.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's all in your mind anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But I was doing it for a bit, and it was cool. Like if your mind starts to wander, if you're thinking about other things, you just come back to your word and just kind of repeat it. Like, that's your rock. And I read somewhere online that if you can't find 10 minutes in your day to do transcendental meditation, you should be doing transcendental meditation. And
I didn't even know what that was before.
It's cool. It's cool. I think people just call it TM meditation. It's super easy, and it really feels great. Like, after the first 2 minutes, you're like, fuck, I really don't want to be sitting here. It's the longest 2 minutes of your life. But come like minute 5 or 6, like, you don't want to open your eyes. You're just like, this is my world now. It's just sitting here in like a state of like nothingness. And I was doing it, and I think generally the purpose is not to solve your problems in that moment. It's to like reset your slate, like get all the clutter off of your mental desk. And then when you open your eyes, it's like, you know, oh, I got to do this in this order. It's so obvious now. And it does kind of help. But yeah, same. I haven't done that in a while. And I usually keep a practice journal, and I haven't done that either. I've kind of gotten a little bit messy with both those things in the past couple of weeks. So I gotta like, you know, get it all together. It all fell apart when my last single, The Shrike, I just dropped, came out. I was like, shit, there's a year and a half of work and recording and videos done. And then it just went to like fucking eating ice cream and like not exercising and not journaling. And it's like, all right, clean it up. You've been a slob for 2 weeks. You barely practice.
Ice cream is therapy though, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah. In moderation.
I honestly, I think implementing meditation and journaling, I personally don't think you need to do that every single day. I think you allow your mind to be like, you know what, I feel like I need this, right? Just like I feel like I need to work out, or I feel like I need to eat a little bit better. For me, it's a little more of a reactive thing, where I find that my mind is just full of just like too many thoughts and too many things happening at once. That's what triggered me to start meditation. And then it helped me kind of control that kind of stuff. And I just kind of felt more comfortable and just been in a better state with it. But yeah, like, I mean, thinking about it now, it wouldn't hurt to go back to it. 'Cause like, it's just been so busy within the past, God, since September, I've just been nonstop writing. for like this new record or this new project.
Let's talk about Auras. I'm curious, like, what's Auras been up to? What are you guys doing? Like, you playing shows?
As of right now, we're not playing shows. We don't have anything booked or planned. I would like to, you know, I would love to, but I think the main focus is just
creating content. You have nothing on Instagram? Am I looking at the right page?
Yep. So I completely cleaned the slate. We're trying to rebrand ourselves a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And that's in the works. But really, it's all about just trying to get back into it. Over the pandemic, I mean, so I write the majority of all the music, right? Like I write like the skeleton, like the structure, mm-hmm. and then I deliver it to the rest of the guys and they put their own piece onto it. But like when it comes to writing, I just struggled with that over the pandemic because I felt like I didn't have anything to work towards to, right? Like I would write here and there, but it wasn't purposeful writing. It wasn't motivating. It was just like, it was more therapeutic, just like kind of writing for the sake of it. It was the moment when things started to open up again and we were like, people were successfully going on tours, like mm-hmm. kind of mid pandemic and mm-hmm. making it work and not really that tiny
window before everyone was like, no, go back inside.
Yeah. Run. So
I remember Intervals did that. Intervals went on tour and I was like, oh shit, things are happening again. And then they just made it home and it was like, no, go back inside.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I've been hearing a lot of that where a lot of bands were motivated to get out there and then they were just hit with another wall and it kind of just like, it was just like in this weird limbo phase. And that was something that I saw was going to happen. Like I didn't know when, if you asked me in 2020, I wouldn't be like, oh, by March 2023, like it'll be relatively normal. Like I had no clue. No one had a clue. Right. So mm-hmm. for me to like write, it was just not really motivating for me. And honestly, I kind of embraced the break from music because I'd been doing music for so long. And I was like, I wonder, you know, what if I just like pursue other things in the meantime? Like my passion for music is not really going to go anywhere. I could always pick it up. So I just did other things. But the moment that things started to open up again and seeing these bands release music and seeing a lot of bands who grew their fan base through the pandemic without any shows was very inspiring for me. So that just motivated me to write. So I went crazy with the writing, wrote like, let's say like 15 tracks worth of stuff. Like mm-hmm. there's like bits and pieces all over, but, and then I brought it to the guys. I was like, all right, what do you guys think? And they're just like, all right, like this is the move. Like it's a little bit different and I think it's time to move forward and pick up where we left off and let's do it.
So how many tracks you got? Because I listened to that one. It was rad. So before I inundate you with questions, like, and what are you playing on it these days?
So I am the vocalist now. So I am the full-time vocalist for Auras. That has been a change that has happened within the past few months, and I'm really excited about it. Eric, you know, maturely decided that he didn't want to move forward with the band for his own personal endeavors, his newfound passions. And
oh, good for him.
We respected it, you know, 100%. We're like, dude, like,
how could you not? I mean, like, people leave jobs all the time. You know, we're adults. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? But
yeah. Totally respect it. You know, there were even thoughts coming like in my head of like in the pandemic, like, do I even really want to do this anymore? So I know what that's like to have like a little bit of self-reflection and see, well, what's really best for me and what I want to do. And, you know, he's put in, you know, lots of work and lots of passion to this project within the last 15 years. So
many years, man. Jeez, I can't believe
it. So many years. And I respected him for him to make that decision. And when he told us, you know, we were shocked, like we were definitely shocked, but you know, he's like a brother to me. Like I've known him since high school. So I was like, you know what you got to do, brother. Like, we'll take it from here. Like, we'll figure it out. You know, like this is just the beginning of this new era of Auras. And you know, if there's a time to do it, it's to do it now, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of like halfway through this new vibe that we're going for, right? And
time is always now. But I feel like the time is always now when it comes to this stuff.
100%. You know? So I was stoked.
That's cool. So wait, so who's in the band? Who's in the band now besides you? Nathan's still playing drums.
Yep, and Aaron Hallman. So it's like the same hardcore three that we've really had since when we released Cascade. Obviously, since then we've kind of cycled through members, but Eric was like the last like real addition to it to make it who we, you know, who we are now. But yeah, so we're, as of right now, we're just three dudes just trying to write music. And the thing was, is when I was writing the music, I didn't really focus on, oh, could I even do that live? Like, or like, is that even possible? Like, I just wanted to write for the sake of writing and make really good music and figure it out later. Mm. That was something that I really struggled with when writing Binary Garden and Heliospectrum as well, as like, oh, we can't have cleans there because there's no way you could do that over a syncopated, you know, metric modulation part. Like, that's not possible. And that's how I always like that. And I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Like, why put myself in a position where I have to perform such insane things, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, after the pandemic and just like realizing that, you know, music is, should just be expressed the way that you want it to be expressed. And should you have to use other tools or other people to help present that live, then so be it. You know, I didn't want to limit myself to, can we do this in a live setting?
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, that's definitely a different way of approaching it. It makes me think, I've been getting into like seeing some like contemporary performers recently, like revisiting people playing music of like Steve Reich and this minimalism stuff. And like, so I saw this performance last weekend, actually. These two guitar players were performing Electric Counterpoint. It's a Steve Reich piece. I wonder if I can play it. If I played something, Omar, would it come through if I screen shared? I think maybe.
Yeah, it would.
I think I've had to pull it up on, I think I'd have to pull it up on my browser.
I wonder if it'll trigger any sort of copyright strike.
You know, knowing Steve Reich, probably would. We could try it.
You should sing it. Just like sing how it goes. Yeah,
sing a piece written for
totally six. Impossible Steve Reich's music. Yeah. Okay, I'll do the other part. I'll sing that.
Perfect. I got the vibe already.
Yeah. anyway, it's like a piece written for, you can look it up, Electric Counterpoint. It's a piece written for a bunch of guitars. Pat Metheny actually recorded the original version. And these guys were like, yeah, we're going to play Electric Counterpoint tonight, but we had to pre-record like 14 of the guitar tracks because it's not possible. It's not possible with two guitar players. And I was like, okay. So 14 pre-recorded guitars and two live guitars. I mean, it's still going to be fun.
I mean, yeah. It's like, if you think about EDM artists, like they're obviously not playing that saxophone that they've put in or like those choirs. Right. Like, I think we're at an age of music where there's other things to compensate for like that part of it where like, oh, like everybody's playing, like they're playing it in full. Like there's like lighting production, like,
yeah.
You know, overall just persona on stage, you know, there's other ways to do it. I think people are a little bit more accepting of that nowadays. At least I am. Yeah, like, yeah, 14 guitars, like that's, you know, we felt weird even just adding like one like backing track guitar. Like, yeah. if we had to do like a show like next week, we're like, whoa, can't, like, yeah. So we'd have to back each other. We felt weird about it, but we're like, you know, like, I feel like everybody does it now. Like a lot of heavy touring acts are doing that.
What's really interesting is this kind of goes back to like what you guys were saying about how like things are like on brand, and like with like Steve Reich's music, a lot of it is not even like just the music itself. It's how it's being performed, right? Like that's a big part of it. You know, with like New York Counterpoint, you want to have
electric counterpoint.
All I don't know that one, but like New York Counterpoint, you want to have like all the clarinets. You know, like you want to have all those clarinets playing live, and like, you know, Steve Reich is known for like looping the same track, but like having the same track layered, but then one of those tracks is like cut off by like a fraction of a second, so that like it starts to stagger, mm-hmm. and then you get like different rhythms, and you know, that's cool and all, but it's about like how he did it, where like he actually literally cut the tape.
Well, that's the story. That's the story, right?
That's
there.
That's wild. You know that's wild.
Yeah,
and yeah, so like I just been, because there's story in this. What do you call that? Just contemporary composition, modern composition. But I mean, he's not new. He's been around for a long time, that style of music. But so much of it is, okay, well, what else is happening here besides the music? So there was this other performer at this same show, Ash Fuhr. I looked her up afterwards. I was like, oh, she must be like some like small newbie artist living in like Bed-Stuy. I looked her up. It's like a professor of music at both Dartmouth and Harvard, like PhD in composition from some other Ivy League school. I was like, oh fuck, I'll never get her on the podcast. But so she did a piece where she had just two speakers, just two raw 12-inch speakers kind of facing up, and it was hooked up to this like desk thing where she had like a pedal, almost like an organ. And she, and then the more she would apply pressure to the pedal, the louder this like would come out of the speaker. And there was also like some like beads or something on the speaker. So the more that the more the speakers oscillated, the more that the beads would like and freak out.
It was wild.
So it was just kind of like there was that, and then she just had a giant piece of like plexiglass that sat on top of the speakers. So when the plexiglass was down, it was just like, you know, rumbly, and then she would lift it up, and then the speakers would like, they would sound different. But then she would also tilt it and lean it and like rock it all around and like all sorts of shapes and stuff. And it was about 20 minutes of this, and I was entranced. I was like, this is the greatest fucking thing I've ever seen. It was like ominous. It was evil. It was acoustic. Like there was no backing tracks. It was a person with two speakers just like rumbling, and she was controlling the intensity with her foot. She was improvising. She was controlling like some of the frequencies with this giant piece of plexiglass. And then also what she was doing was like paired with some tube lights in front of her and behind her that kind of reacted to what she was doing. So kind of like I have behind me some tube lights. If the music got like really intense and aggressive, these tube lights would light up like vibrant orange, like they were going to explode. And if she was, and then there was one part where she just smashed the plexiglass down on top of the speakers and just kind of flattened the sound out of like, and just like went from 100 to nothing, and the tube lights just shut off like really quick, and it was pitch black in the place.
Whoa.
And I was like, I fucking love every moment of this. This is the greatest performance of anything I've ever seen. And it had nothing to do with scales, guitar, a band. There's no backing tracks. It was just a woman, just like, I don't know how she identifies, to be honest with you. It was just a person like just rocking it with this fucking loud ominous speaker thing. It was so cool. And yeah, I went home that night and I was like, man, the most important thing that I could do for my music is not think about, I already know chords, I know scales. Like, yeah. What else can I add to my music here that's going to bring an element of whatever the heck I just saw tonight?
Beads.
Beads. Fucking Mardi Gras beads. We did it.
You did it. You know, the way that you described it, I haven't seen this, but the way that you described it blew my mind. So I can imagine like actually being there and seeing this as an artist as well, like just to like see what they're doing to perform it, right?
Yeah, it was a piece called, I had to look it up later. I think it's a version of one of her pieces called Shiverlung. It's so funny. You look up her on, this is like a sold out performance, several hundred people in New York City, but you find this artist on Spotify. It's like 60 monthly listeners. Like, this is a different world. You don't listen to this on Spotify. You go see these performances.
Right. It's an experience, right?
Yeah, it's an experience.
That's wild.
Yeah, it was so cool.
That's never been done before.
No, and this is like what this artist does, and there's other artists like this. You know, like Omar was saying, take a sample and cut it with tape and have it repeat, and over time it gets more and more. You know, the sample becomes more and more misaligned with the copy of itself, and you kind of know that's coming too. Like the enjoyment comes from, oh man, this is going to get so twisted in about 3 minutes, and you just hang on. Definitely a different feeling from like, oh, when I put on this new Meshuggah track, I can't wait to just get smashed with like riffs and grooves, you know.
Yeah,
a different brain. Yeah. Like, I think we're entitled to. It's totally valid to want different, you know, different stuff.
Do I want a slice of pizza or do I want fermented duck egg?
Yeah, that's another analogy. That's another analogy from this podcast.
Can I have both? Can I have both?
Totally.
You can. Totally can.
Yes. Fermented duck egg.
Josh, I had a question for you, man. One of the things we talk about a lot on this podcast is short form content and how that's really just been the primary way to get anything out nowadays. And this is something that you're not new to, especially because like your cousin's been involved with the short form for over a decade.
He was
doing that Mansuki shit back in like 2010. I remember.
Still or no longer?
He's still in the same industry. He just doesn't. He's not like a creator. He's more of like the people behind the scenes that, I mean, you know, that he was part of that first wave of short form, right? And where people were analyzing and be like, wow, so 7 seconds gets when you the same
form,
result as
when short form was 7 seconds.
7 seconds, yeah. Right?
Vine.
And, you know, the thing that both he learned and myself is that this is where social media real estate really came to life, and where people, you know, brand deals and advertising really came with that short form stuff, because these companies realized, oh, we could pay this kid $2,000 to just like wear our Nike shoes instead of spending $250,000 on a Nike commercial. Mm-hmm. And because like the influence and the outreach and the engagement with these short form influencers was just doing way more than like an advertisement coming up on cable television would. So I've been part of that short world for such a long time, and I saw it grow and grow and grow. And then I really tried to disconnect myself from TikTok when it first came out, because to me, initially when it came out, it was like, oh, it's just like people dancing and stuff. But then that stuff started to transfer over that I was seeing from Vine into TikTok. And especially when you consider the algorithm, it's insane. You know, the kind of reach and engagement it can cater to your specific target audience. Like, and you know, Ray's in the back, you know, he's in the behind the scenes with all that kind of stuff, and he deals with a lot of TikTok creators and a lot of short form creators, and it's a very important tool that I'm going to be utilizing more so than ever when it comes to the next era of Auras with, you know, this new track that that we'll be releasing, and also just like I said about connecting with the fans a little bit more. I want to utilize that kind of thing as well through short form. Cause that's just something I would like to do personally with my fans, mm-hmm. is to really connect with them. So yeah, I'm well aware of the short form kind of approach. And I see it being very useful for a lot of bands that are killing it right now. So, I look forward to diving into that, learning how to navigate that kind of stuff. And yeah, like we just did some filming on Thursday and that conversation came up, you know, Aaron and I were talking about, Aaron's like, you know, we should do a full playthrough of this, like this thing. And I was like, honestly, we can, but I think the return will be a lot better if we just focus on like the shinier parts of the song and really think about 30 seconds of that and presenting that in like a very fast pace instead of like a long form thing. And he kind of understood it at the end, and we agreed to do, we ended up filming for both. So we did like a full guitar playthrough of that and then really focused on the short form stuff. But yeah, I mean, you nailed it, Omar.
Yeah, and we do these long, this is long form, obviously. We post this entire thing on YouTube, but we also make sure to chop this up into as many pieces as possible, because that's where, I don't want to call it gold, because no one here is making any money doing this, but like, but that's, you know, where it really is. The repeat plays that we'll get, and the shares that we'll get on Instagram, posting 30 seconds of this, posting it on Instagram as a reel, we're talking thousands of plays, couple shares, 20, 30 shares, maybe on some of the better things. And only a handful of people are actually watching this whole thing on YouTube or listening to the entire podcast. So, you know, this hour or so of conversation, really the big win here is the 10 clips that we find. You know, and so I don't really, my YouTube channel, I know this is different for other artists like Rabia Massad, Ola Englund, their YouTube channel is killing it. They have long form demos and things like that. And my YouTube channel is more like a repository for, hey, do you want the extended version of whatever I just did? It's over here. But you know, that's not where my big wins are. You know, I have the Shrike music video on my YouTube channel with like, shit, let's see, 100 views. It's bad. It's really bad. 445 views on my music video. But the 1 minute clip I posted of the guitar solo section, I posted as a reel on Instagram, is floating around like 15,000 plays, a bunch of reshares. And it's because it's a 45 second minute guitar solo and people are in and out. So, it, you know, yeah, it doesn't hurt my feelings. That's just the way it is. Like, hey, yeah, if you want to go watch me play for a guitar solo for 45 seconds, here it is. If you have the patience to sit through the whole music video, here it is. Choose your own adventure.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you also have to like think about what it's like to be on the receiving end, and you're like, oh, that was really cool. Like, are you going to share a whole podcast link to someone? Or are you just going to be like, yo, look at what they talked about. Like, see what I was talking about? It's like so much easier, and like they're more incentivized to share it, because it's like, you know that who you're giving it to is probably going to give the time and day if it's only 30 seconds, right? There's like Instagram being able to share reels like that. Same with TikTok. Like when you look at like the direct messaging within TikTok, it's not a lot of conversations, it's a bunch of sharing. Like it's like, oh, they shared this video, they shared this video. You know, TikTok, they have the big share button. It's super easy to share, whether it's like through a link or whatever. You know, it's a lot easier to share that than a 2 hour long podcast or like a, you know, like a 2 hour long stream. Like, you know, I've been dabbling into Twitch and learning how to do that with like one of the video games I love is PUBG. And, you know, I have a TikTok channel specifically just for my my streaming world. And I get like, you know, like 800 to like 1500 views there. But then when I'm actually streaming, I'm only getting like average like 10 viewers, right? So it's like the content piece of it is going to circulate more than just the long form stuff right now. And you know, that's why I thought about the playthrough. I'm like, you know, our song is not crazy on the guitar. It has its moments and it's got its grooves and stuff, but like, I don't think someone's going to like watch the entire thing unless it's like something super unique. Like if he's playing on top of like the CN Tower or something, like people are like, oh, what?
Yeah, or like four neck guitar or some shit.
Exactly. Or if it's like, he's playing on a broomstick, you know, like I've seen that, mm-hmm, the gent broomstick.
Yeah.
So yeah, short form, I think is the way to go. I mean, I just see it in my own attention span sometimes, that it would just be more useful of like the receiver's time and my time as well. So So when I do a full 2 hour, 3 hour stream, I go through it and I get clips and then I upload it. And that's just, and I understand that it's going to get more attention on the TikTok side, but it's just how it is, like you said.
Yeah. So where does Auras live mostly right now on TikTok? Because you're not posting to Instagram. Your brand is great though. And your brand has always been good. Like the art, the album covers, the shirts, how you guys look on stage. Like Auras has always been, you know, a thing. I look at some ever forthright videos, and we're like, Billy's wearing basketball shorts, Kevin's wearing like a purple button-down shirt, I'm wearing like a red button-down shirt, and I think Jared is wearing all black. Like, no one told us, hey, why don't you look like a band for a change? Definitely something. Definitely, you know exactly what I'm talking about too.
It's funny you say that, because I think I want to put a more conscious effort on making our live shows more of an experience than like, oh, there's Josh doing vocals and there's Nathan. Like, obviously Nathan himself, he's got his own theatrics and it's huge. But as a whole on stage, I want the audience to immerse into it a little bit more. Coordinating clothing to complement the lights that we have, or complement the vibe that we're trying to come across on stage. Right now, like in terms of social media, we're not like really on social media. I do my bits and pieces here, but when it's time, when we release music, when we unleash the content that we've built up so far, that's when it's going to be a lot more present online. And like I said, we're still learning, trying to adapt that way. But I mean, social media has been a very important tool for us since like we started. Like, I think our biggest break was when we released Cascade on Gentleman's Club Facebook page. And that's where we gathered like
Gentleman's Club.
Do you remember that? we were named like Gent Band of the Month. And we got on this is when Facebook pages were like the thing. Like, if your Facebook page was popping, like, it's great, right? Like, we got thousands of fans just from that. And that was just from a single post on the Gentleman's Club. So social media is no stranger to us. It's, you know, we understand. But now that we see it more as a, it's definitely a way more optimized and streamlined tool now. I'm definitely going to be interacting with it a lot more moving forward. And of course, I have Ray behind me. He knows everything you need to know when it comes to engagement, because that's his job. You know, like he deals with brands and he deals with influencers. So
I'm gonna have to talk with Ray. Yeah,
he should. He's chill. Like, he's, you know, he's part of, he's been heavy into the newer stuff. Like, he's heavily involved.
Well, you guys had him on. Was it on one of the tracks for Cascade?
It was. We always have him in somewhere. So we have him in Boundless on that Crestfallen EP. We've had him in Stars Abound and Heliospectrum. Nothing on Binary, just because there was like a, he was actually going to be on it, but there was just like a conflict in timing. He's a busy guy. But now we do have him on another track that I'm really stoked about for this newer phase of Auras. Nice.
And he's doing clean vocals. So that's his thing.
That's his thing. Yes.
Yeah.
That is his thing. And he's always going to be part of the Auras family, and he will get involved however he can. And he's always been a great help and everything. So he'll be around. But yeah, you should definitely talk to him about Shortform, because like, I'm sure he'd be down to hop on here because he loves talking about it.
Yeah, sure. There's really nothing off limits like that. We're trying to get on this, you know, marketing advice. I really want to get some like musicologists on here, because we've been talking a lot about like, what's the point of all this? You know, what's the, you know, am I like, do I practice for my own ego? Do I practice because of like deep rooted trauma that I'm now working through as, or that I've been working through as, you know, since I was a teenager, you know?
That would be sick, to be honest.
You know what I mean? So like, I just want to talk to someone. Like, what is the cultural reason for doing any of this? Like, what what have been reasons for writing music throughout history? You know, why did like Bach feel the need to write the way he did and as much as he did? And why did Vivaldi need to do the things that he did? And
that's, I mean, that is the question I always ask myself as well. Like, why is it that two notes, the tension between two notes, why do I have such an emotional response to it? You know, why does it inspire me to do stuff? Why does it set the tone for my day when there's two frequencies just like battling each other, harmonizing, right? Like,
and then for someone else, the same two notes mean absolutely nothing.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, some people, I know people that don't listen to music. Like, they'll just be like, I don't listen to music. And I'm just like,
do you have a soul?
I'm not saying like you don't, they don't listen. Like, they, you know, they listen here and there. Like, they're not like into it. Like, they just don't at all. Like, yeah. they don't even have a Spotify account. It's like, you know, so, and it, to each their own, right? They have other ways to give an emotional response to TV, you know, Netflix, all that stuff. Reality TV shows, whatever floats your boat. But yeah, like the idea that music is universal almost across all cultures and generations and time, that fascinates me. And I, you know, get that musicologist on, because I'll sit there with popcorn and listen.
Yeah, I'm telling you, this like contemporary art music show that I went to the other day really got me thinking, because the musicologist opened up the show, but not with like an informative thing, more of just like, hi, I'm, and I totally forgot his name because I was ignoring him, like, just because I was just like, all right, I gotta listen to this crap now before the cool shit starts. And then he said his name, and then he went into like, yeah, I'm a musicologist and I have a book for sale outside. And I was just like, oh shit, I didn't catch his name. And like, I guess, what does it matter? I didn't know what I was in for. And then he, I think he curated the set, and then I was knocked out by the show, and I was like, should have listened to that guy's name. Totally. I mean, I could probably email the venue.
Or you could probably find them. Yeah.
But yeah, like, people like, but there's a difference between, so I'm reading this book right now called The Jazz of Physics, and
sick name.
It's pretty cool. So it's a Stefan Alexander. Let me just make sure I say it right. I talked about this on, we did a podcast with Cheyenne Javadi. Do you know Cheyenne Javadi? Guitar.
Why does that ring a bell? That heavily rings a bell.
Yeah, Cheyenne is sick. Anyway, but so let's see. Jazz of Physics. The secret link between music and, this is cut off something. Secret link between music and the structure of the universe. I am a little more than halfway through it, and I feel like it deserves like two or three reads to kind of wrap your head around it, but it is really, so far, so heavily physics that I don't feel like I'm getting an answer to the question, what is the secret link between music and the structure of the universe? Like, okay, a black hole, or some black hole that we can observe is resonating at a B flat 50 octaves below middle C. That's super cool. Does it make me think about how that can impact my art? I don't think so. Like, what am I going to do? Play a super low B flat and call this piece the black hole? Like, that seems a little bit too shallow to me. Or
yes.
You know what I mean? Or like when people write, like they compose around pi. I've seen so many metal musicians be like, the song is called pi. And it's like, okay, so how are you embracing pi? Like, are you doing something with like physics and math? No, I'm just playing the third fret, then the first fret, then the fourth fret, and then
like, After the Burial did that.
Yeah, but that's so shallow to me. I mean, I guess they did that a long time ago, but, and I like After the Burial. But okay, so if I were to listen to that, the thing that I would enjoy from that, from After the Burial, is the mix is sick, the groove is sick. Like, I'm just having a good time at this point. 3-1-4 is, I mean, it's F minor. So I guess anything that comes after that is a bunch of other shit too, but it's like, who cares? It's metal. The groove is sick. Who cares what the notes are? But yeah, so some in I was I don't know if I'm gonna get an answer, but I am kind of looking for some deeper meaning as to how physics and music comes together that is beyond some kind of surface level. Well, everything vibrates. String theory: the universe is made of vibrating strings. Okay, what do I do with that information now? You know,
you play your guitar to vibrate strings.
But, yeah. It's a, okay, so I guess I'll just go practice what I was practicing yesterday. You know, like that kind of stuff. So I feel like I haven't had my big epiphany yet in reading this. That's why I'm saying I think I need like two or three reads through it to. I'm also not done, so who knows? Okay, so there's the what I was getting at is that there's having like a musicologist or something. I think comes in two flavors. There's that, like, I guess that would be more of a physicist.
That's very dense.
That'd be more like a physicist. Like, hey, tell me why music and physics have like some kind of relationship, and don't tell me because a black hole is resonating at a B flat. I don't care. Like, go deeper than that. Like, why does my brain my you know, I guess I'm made of the same shit that my desk is made of, right? Like fucking atoms and crap. Anyway,
well, you're thinking about like the psychology versus the physics of it. Like, those are two different, you know,
maybe
ways of looking at it. Like, the way I think of when I'm listening to music, like, I think that's more of a psychological thing than a physics thing. But like, they could overlap at a certain point, but it's physics, like, yeah, like you said, like, everything's matter, like, it is what it is, right? Where physics is like the what, where like psychology is like the why. That's like the way I look at it.
Yeah, or like, was there a general agreement on how Pythagoras should have cut up the octave? Like, Pythagoras was a mathematician.
No, there wasn't.
Huh?
That's why we have so many different like tunings.
Yeah, but is it? But was everyone kind of like, yeah, but let's agree that this one sounds better, like, or doesn't it, or does it? You know what I mean? Like, is a major third like a nice happy chord because we've been conditioned that way, or did someone play a major third and go, oh, that feels pretty happy?
That's the way I think it is. It's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, was music just like made, or did they think about like, oh, in order to make that happy sound, you have to do it this interval, you know, difference between two frequencies, right? Like, which one came first? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
The emotion, for sure.
Like, but I would assume, just like as humans, like, they at some point were experimenting and they're like, that feels good.
Yeah, it definitely has something to do with like the oscillating waves. Like, it's probably nice and relaxed at a third, and it's nice and relaxed at a fifth, and but it's also pretty relaxed at a minor third. So I don't know why major third and minor third, chicken or egg. Like, why is the one the happy one?
Have you guys ever watched Adam Neely's TED talk on polyrhythms?
No.
Oh, no, but so I did.
Within that TED talk, he basically breaks down that like a major triad is nothing more than, I think it was 2 against 3 against 5.
4 against 5 against 6. 4 evenly spaced pulses in the same amount of time as 5 evenly spaced pulses, as in the same amount of time as 6 evenly spaced pulses.
So he started just playing a beat, and then he sped it up, and then it just makes a major chord.
I saw that. Okay, yes.
Which is obviously, you know, in the simplest form of frequency.
Oscillating waves, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this book does go into that a little bit too. Like, there's the primary wave, which kind of takes the precedent of the note being played, but timbre comes from other notes as well, but we just perceive them as texture and timbre as opposed to, oh, that's pretty cool. So he took like a rhythm of 2, 3, and 5.
4 against 5 against 6.
And then had them vibrate at like 440 hertz as opposed to just smacking it, and that's what generated.
He sped it up, right?
Yeah,
he sped it up. So it was just really simple clicks, and then he just sped it up, and the faster he got, the more it just, you know, you heard it go, and it was just this perfect major chord, major triad.
It was wild. Yeah, it was pretty wild.
That's pretty amazing. Anyway, so yeah, fundamentals of music and physics, and then there's the cultural thing. That's my part B that I That's, I think, where the musicologist comes in. Like, where does, what is the point of all this from a cultural perspective? The reasons why people have historically written music, like, is there an innate thing in a lot of people that we like to watch other people perform, that we like to watch other people play music? Like, I don't know what questions to ask, because it's not a conversation I've ever had, you know. But, like, you know, you look at, there's drums that have been uncovered from civilizations thousands of years ago, and, you know, so obviously there was a, they weren't listening to Spotify. No one was shoving music down their throat. They probably knew like 13 other people in their tribe, but somehow people all over the world have decided one way or another, hey, it feels pretty good when we like make a beat and like sing songs. Yeah. And I'm thinking about this a lot again, because I'm trying to give my music a little bit more purpose. Like, I've done the practicing thing. I've practiced so hard, and I've written music that's so difficult. And at a certain point, it's like, who am I doing this for? You know? And as I get older, the more I'm listening to things like someone putting a piece of plexiglass over a speaker, or, you know, listening to blues guitarists. It is really tempting though, and Instagram can feel like a bit of a thirst trap, and it does come on with its insecurities, but you got to stand strong. Like, you see someone just ripping through some shit, and you could say, okay, that is an avenue. It doesn't mean it's the avenue or an avenue I need to go down. And I've mentioned before that I have a mentor with this guitarist, Jonathan Kreisberg, one of the raddest guitar players on the planet, one of the best jazz guitarists ever, really. And him and I speak about once a month, and we've got this like relationship where I share my music, we talk about things, and he kind of helps me navigate these thoughts. And I show him kind of these thirst trap guitar players sometimes, and he's like, yeah, but is it, this is the music, like, did he need to tap that top note, or did he just do the tapping part because it looks cool? Like, did that serve the music? Maybe it did.
With music, there is showmanship, right? There is that element, right?
Yeah. And Cheyenne, when we spoke to Cheyenne on here too, she was like, yeah, but can't you just do it because it makes you feel good? Isn't that value enough? Or do it because it looks cool. Like, sometimes it doesn't need to be a deeper meaning than because it makes you look cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. But for me, sometimes that's not the answer I'm looking for, you know? It's like, well, how do I get to the black hole, though? How do I create a black hole in my room? I don't know.
You just meditate till you just...
Just meditate.
Become a black hole. Man, that's some real dense thoughts, you know, when it comes to like music.
And I love your music, by the way. If I'm saying something contradictory to the way that you're thinking of processing stuff as you're writing and navigating your own stuff, I love Auras, and I love, you know, everything that you guys have ever done. So please don't go and like change your music to be oscillating speakers with beads, because I don't.
Nick, do you remember the first time we saw Auras? We were on tour with Intervals, and like, I remember Nathan Bullock kept like, you know, coming through to like every show, and I'm like, who is this guy? And he's like, oh, you guys should check out my band. I'm like, all right, cool, whatever. And then Koi Fest rolls around, and we saw you guys, and I was like, what the fuck is this? So good.
Wait. Koi Fest? What year was that?
2012?
2010, 2011? It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it must have been 2010, 2011, yeah.
Wait, so you guys were on tour?
With Intervals.
And was Nathan playing drums for you guys?
Yep, for you guys.
But didn't he play for you guys at one point?
One show.
Okay. Here.
In front of one guy.
In front of one fan.
Yeah, that was so long ago that I don't even remember
what that was like.
Where hey, well, play- look, I want to play. I want to play a show with you guys again. It'd be cool. So if you're like booking a Toronto show or an upstate New York show or something like that, I'll do my best to make the trip. Hopefully, we can do one or like two or three, so that way it's get a little bit more bang for the buck.
Let's do a run.
Well, I got two babies. I got two babies. I got two little babies at home, a 2.5-year-old and a 5-month-old. So I can't be gone for too long. But, you know, a long weekend or something.
Yeah, weekend warrior kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Plus, I have a job.
Same. Exactly. I have a 9-to-5. So, like, that aligns with me more than you know. So
yeah, cool. Cool, man. Well, I think we're about wrapping it up. This is awesome. I loved catching up, talking about some of this stuff. I wonder if I've put some thoughts in your head about like story and things like that, because it's definitely something I've been thinking about.
100%. I think, like I said, it's not common. It doesn't happen often where you get to be in a room with other like-minded individuals that have the same philosophical kind of questions when it comes to music and like the approach for it. It's like, I can't talk about this kind of stuff at work. Like, people would just be like, what? Like, what are you talking? Like, you know, on break time or something like that. Like, my fiance, she's not, you know, she's not a musician. I can't just be like, yeah, so like that major third chord, right? Like, it's,
yeah.
It's not often that you get to have these conversations, and having these conversations just is therapeutic, like you said. So, I love having these kinds of conversations about the philosophy and psychology about music, and especially in the marketing aspect and how that has changed since, like, just within the past 10 years has completely changed that people take in music, how people share music. Like, I think the sharing music thing is it's gone to this whole new level. Because, like, before, what you do, like, you would share a CD, or like you would show them in a car when you're like commuting somewhere. That's how you would share music. Now you could just send a song link, or send a TikTok, be like, yo, listen how sick this song is. You should probably listen to the whole thing eventually, you know? Mm-hmm. It's crazy how that has changed. And I'm very excited to take everything that I've really learned, especially from this podcast, to apply it to, you know, our music moving forward. So, you know, I thank you guys for this chat, and I'd love to talk more about this even off podcast if you guys are just down to, you know, grab a beer and just talk about this stuff.
Yeah, sure. Hey, look, content is everything, so we might as well record it.
fair.
Everything is content. Is there anything else you want to mention about the new music that you're doing? I don't know if we kind of skipped over that too much. The Green Oasis.
I mean, it's totally cool. Whenever this comes out, I'm assuming the music is out. Go listen to it. I would love to hear everybody's thoughts, and I look forward to sharing more of what we have coming up within the next year when it comes to Auras, because, you know, we haven't released stuff in a very long time. So I, as an artist that's just been kind of stuck in the house this entire time, I'm excited to bring it all out and see where it takes us for this new journey. So
sick, yeah. Dude. It was sick chatting with you, Josh. Hope to catch you really, really soon.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.